It's time for Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life, with your host, injury compensation attorney, author, and mentor, Alan Gervie. Alan is managing attorney at the law firm of Rowan Gervie & Wynn, a workers' compensation law firm who have represented injured workers for over 35 years. And now, here's your host, Alan Gervie.
Good evening, Los Angeles, and everyone listening all over the world on KABC.com. I am Alan Gervie, and I'm the managing partner of the law firm of Rowan, Gervie, and Wynn. And today I am here. Well, I'm not there. I'm still in Canada. People have been following my plight as I've been in Canada in quarantine and handling a lot of family business for weeks now. But I'm here to try to manage your life. I've got two people in studio who are going to co-host with me, and I'm very thankful for that because they can manage your lives much better than I can. I'm excited to have these two. Both of them have been on the show before, and they're going to be hosting with me live in studio from Los Angeles. First up is Troy Slayton. You know Troy from being a legal analyst on every network, Nancy Grace, Dr. Drew, The O'Reilly Factor, Primetime Justice. He's a former child actor on Cagney and Lacey, Parker Lewis Can't Lose, and he's been a lawyer for many years, not that many years, but, you know, he's still young and he's a stud, always looks good when he's on camera, and he's a great lawyer. He's done criminal employment workers comp, and in 2020, he ran for Los Angeles Superior Court, seat 145, garnering 560,000 votes. Wow, that's pretty impressive.
Who's counting?
Troy, welcome back to Gervie's Law.
Thank you, Alan. You know, 560,000, I still was unsuccessful, but, you know, who's counting?
But a lot of people were very proud of you because they thought you did a great job and they wanted you to win, and you were really close. So you got to be proud of that.
I am proud, but, you know, close only counts in horseshoes and
hand
grenades.
Right. You know, I'm really happy, Troy, that you called me up this afternoon, or at least texted me and said, we need to bring some color to the show. We need to have someone on who can, you know, has a great voice and who is really a good friend. And I'm so excited that James Torme has accompanying you there.
Yes.
At the studio. He's a jazz vocalist, one of the greatest of our time, of the last 20 years. In fact, the New York Post said the greatest jazz singer, male jazz singer, to come along in 20 years. And there he is, right there in studio. He's the son of the legend Mel Torme. He's got great albums, Love for Sale, Coming Home. And he's definitely the smooth and cool one in studio. James, welcome back to Gervie's Law.
No, buddy, it's great to be back.
Ooh, look at that round of applause.
Look, the crowd goes wild.
You know, the most famous quote that I've heard about James, and the best quote, was from the late Hugh Hefner, who said that James Torme is a chip off the old block, and what a mighty cool block it is.
Wow.
Hef, you can always count on Hef. More applause.
Were you buddies with Hef?
Oh,
he didn't say that about me.
My father was very close with Hef, so spent, you know, a good amount of time, going up to Manly Night on a Monday night, which wasn't a bit scandalous. I hate to disappoint everyone.
What was Manly Night? What would you do?
Well, it was my dad and Hef and a bunch of people of that generation,
like
sort of Chuck McCann.
Chuck Heston?
Chuck Heston. And, you know, Robert Stack and Ray Anthony, the band leader, people like that. And it was just a bunch of older guys. They'd sit around
a bunch of naked women everywhere?
No. Not a bit. No. A lot of M&Ms and peanut M&Ms and watching old movies is what it was.
Would they watch videos?
Oh, no. Oh, no.
How would they watch the films?
Well,
on film?
Yes. Actual films.
See, I was setting that up because I knew that. Because when I was very young and met James at UCLA, I was introduced to their home, the estate in Coldwater Canyon in Beverly Hills, California. And James brings me over to his house. He's a kid I met at UCLA in the fraternity system. And he brings me there. And in the screening room where there are actual, like, theater seats connected together, like you would see in a movie theater where the seat flips down. And then there's this, you know, I see a screen on the wall, but there's no projector anywhere. There's no, I'm like, wonder how do they get the movies on there? And then all of a sudden there's this thing on the wall, which is a display case of all these model trains.
Right.
And James slides that over to the right to reveal the projectionist booth and then a secret door leading back into the projectionist booth and then another door behind that that led into a refrigerated room with all
of passages.
The
yeah, multiple like passages, air-conditioned passages.
And like aisles of floor-to-ceiling films that were kept at a frosty, wow. I don't know, 60-something degrees.
The whole point here, of course, is that you weren't allowed a film collection. In other words,
it was illegal.
Yeah, Hef and my dad both concealed the extent of their collections as much as they could.
Why did they need to conceal it?
Well, because I believe there were rules. You weren't really supposed to have private film collections. That going back, of course, and you'll remember this from film class at UCLA, you know, to some of those distribution rules.
That's
remember
right.
all of that. And then,
so these were illegal prints, so they couldn't let people know they had them. And there was projectionist rules because your dad, I never got to go to Hef's, but your dad had an Eike projector.
Several Eike projectors.
And there was rules against running that projector without a projectionist, without a union projectionist.
Right.
And your dad, an avid film buff, is not going to have some stranger come in to run the projection.
No.
In fact, when he'd run a film, the film would break. Oh, just hold on a second, kids.
Yeah.
I'm just going to go splice it back together again.
And
he'd be there with the splicer and taping the film back together.
You sit there for a half an hour in the middle of, you know, Fantasia. A half an hour break in the middle of a film like that so that the film could be spliced and then, you know, re-fed onto another reel.
Your dad was mad.
This is just fascinating. I think growing up in Canada, I certainly didn't have this kind of life. You guys were living it. It's incredible.
We were biz kids.
Yeah, I mean, but I have to say, though, and Troy may have seen this, that while I didn't have that kind of childhood or growing up at all, I was famous this week for a few minutes on the cover of Calabasas Style magazine.
Yes,
with
I
my
saw
family.
That.
And we had
a Calabasas native.
Calabasas Style.
I saw that in the Book of Faces. And, you know, I grew up in Calabasas, so...
The Calabasas Slaytons.
And I have a connection to Alan that goes back to kindergarten.
Really?
Because Alan's wife was in kindergarten with me at Round Meadow Elementary.
Oh my
at
God.
The back gate of Hidden Hills where she grew
That's
up.
That's right.
Look at you
and
guys.
And she was there on the cover with me and Harper and Hudson looking beautiful.
Beautiful family.
And they didn't mention you in the article. It's a great article. So if anyone hasn't seen it, they can pick up Calabasas Style or they can
Good
look online.
You,
it's online. And they didn't mention Troy
they
at all.
They did not mention me in the article
as,
about your family?
Nancy's,
That's messed up.
Kindergarten schoolmate.
What? I'm really a little bit disappointed.
I'm disappointed.
I'm going to have to call your wife and say, you know, next time she's giving an interview about her family, she better mention her kindergarten days.
Was that school that you went to, that school that with the connection there, was that before or after your mother told you, when you grow up, you can be any kind of doctor you want?
Yes, my mom, and I think that was my grandmother that said, you know, there are so many options for you when you grow up. You're going to go to college, and you can be any kind of doctor you want.
A juris doctor.
I ended up being a juris doctor.
Right. That was your way of almost skirting the rules.
Yeah, I snuck in. I found a loophole. I don't like
You know, you guys must have had great conversations late at night at UCLA talking about your past because, you know, Troy, of course, being in TV, on shows, and James, I mean, you were just living the life. I would have loved to have been a fly on the wall at UCLA with you guys.
We did. We used it to our advantage. We did.
Yes, we did.
We may have, in a class or two, gone to the professor. In fact, I remember one time when the late, great Frank Sinatra passed away.
Oh, my gosh. I remember this.
And we were coming up on a very important exam.
Which we were not prepared properly
not
for.
Not prepared for.
History.
It was history.
Professor
Amy Davis at UCLA, one of the best professors I ever had.
Great professor.
She was amazing, but we were not quite prepared for it. So then Frank Sinatra dies, and we think, oh, my gosh, this is our excuse. Professor Davis, we need to go.
We go to the professor and we say, you know what?
We need to go to
you
the funeral.
You have to understand.
We have to go to the funeral.
We're from the business. We're biz kids. we can't function right now. Frank Sinatra just died. We have to go to the funeral.
We're going to Palm Springs.
which I wasn't, by the way. I did not go to that funeral.
Neither did I.
I don't think I was invited.
No, I certainly wasn't.
And we have to go to that. We have to deal with all the stuff.
And
she just kind of looked at us.
And said, okay.
And we got to take the exam about 2 weeks
later.
Yeah, and we got, and then we were all set up for it. And then we still didn't study.
You guys got away with so much.
Then we still didn't study.
You know, just the biz kids. And you know what? I'm going to put you both to work after the break. We got to take a break. We have Sari Kim on, and she has been very popular. It's amazing that we got her on this show because Fox News has been trying to get her, and a lot of people want to talk to her. If you don't know the story of Sari Kim, you got to tune in after the break. And then later in the show, we have a real inspiring show. We have a segment with Miguel Sancho. And that's going to be very inspiring on the book, More Than You Can Handle. And I think you can all handle it. We're going to talk to Sari Kim after break. We're here with Troy Slayton and James Torme. And you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Welcome back to Gervie's Law, turning Murphy's Law upside down on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
This is great. This is some good tunes. Hey, Troy, I know Art is in studio, and I'm not there.
Yes, Alan.
But can you tell me who he's playing? He's got some really great taste. Who is this?
That is James Torme singing the classic, Coming Home.
Wow. Can we get him on the show sometime?
He's on right now, keeping your seat warm at KABC.
Am I chopped liver here? I mean, what's up?
James, nice stuff.
Thanks,
man.
It's smooth. That is smooth,
it's
like his
smooth,
dad, the Velvet
and,
Fog.
You know, someone called you, he said, old school charm meets new school swagger.
Right. I think I made that up myself. You know, I wrote like 9 out of 10 of those kind of quotes, you know. That's a good thing. That's nice because, you know, that kind of sets me up as the bridge, right? The bridge between what was and what will be musically.
That's true.
And that's kind
and
of what I'm doing. Let's
talk
I want to
about
take it to
what
the next...
will be with Sari Kim.
Oh, yeah.
For those of you who have not been following Sari Kim's story, she is, first of all, a very accomplished lawyer, went to UT Law. She worked for both President Trump and for President Bush in their administrations. She blogs, just for the fun of it, food and travel. She's been a commentator on ABC, CBS, and Fox, and she's really in demand now because she ran for the 6th Congressional District as a Republican in Texas and unfortunately didn't win, but she said some controversial things that people are interested in talking to her about, and we want to talk to her just about her life. Sari Kim, welcome to Gervie's Law.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, what do you mean having you? It's impossible to get you. Everyone wants to talk to you. Why is that? What was this experience running as a Republican in Texas for the congressional district, 6th congressional district? Why did this make you a star?
Well, man, I should come on this show every day. This is so good for my bruised ego after losing in this wild jungle primary. My goodness, this is fantastic.
It's nothing to be ashamed of. I ran for judge here in Los Angeles County, a county of 9 million, and 560,000 votes didn't get me a win. So nothing to feel bad about.
Oh, my gosh. Well, so I would say three quick things. I mean, one, for most people, they don't realize that 23 people were running in a jungle primary. So in Texas, we have this weird thing where all the Republicans, all the Democrats, even the independent and libertarian can run on one ticket. It was a 7-week race. We had the widow of the congressman who passed from COVID. We had a state rep. We had a wrestler. I mean, it was like Real Housewives meet Keeping Up with the Kardashians. I mean, it was just like such a really interesting experience. And then second, we mostly expected President Trump to stay out of it. And I have said all day, every day, as a Republican, as someone who understands the value of a Trump endorsement, whoever President Trump endorses is going to win. And one other person was very fortunate enough to get that endorsement 4 days before the election. And so that really sets a metric. And I'm so happy for that person. I mean, honestly, I wish I would have gotten it. But, you know, when you have so many people and you have so much talent, there's only so much you can do about getting that endorsement. And the third thing is, like, just like you said that you ran for office, I mean, what an amazing testament, despite how ugly the election was, despite how ugly January 6th is, despite how ugly the lies of Joe Biden and the lies of Kamala Harris are, that so many people are still interested in public policy and public service and stepping into the arena. And let me tell you, this was my first time running for office, but I am more eager to fight the next battle than to stand down. I am really just so excited and enthused about the reaction that everybody's given to me.
Sari, this was your first foray into politics, your first run for national office, and yet it wasn't without controversy. There are some other Korean-American Republican women that were serving in Congress, Young Kim and Michelle Steele from California, and they were supporting you, and then they pulled out.
Tell us about that.
These are Republican,
yes.
Asian-American Republican women that pulled their support for you.
You know, so what happened was the Dallas Morning News put direct quotes around, "I didn't want them." And then they editorialize the rest of it. I understand that they've made hundreds of thousands of dollars from this news article, which still is the top grossing Facebook ad for the Dallas Morning News. And basically what it was is I was in a forum. It was the first debate. And we were having a public policy conversation about the origins of COVID, as well as the fight for global supremacy. And it is my position, even as an Asian person, that the Chinese Communist Party is the largest threat to American supremacy, to democracy around the world. And anybody who stands down to the CCP, anybody who apologizes for driving the conversation home that the Chinese Communist Party originated coronavirus in Wuhan, they need to be held accountable. They steal our intellectual property. They go into countries that are democratic like Hong Kong and take away all their freedoms. If people want to light my reputation on fire and call me a racist for saying that the CCP lies, cheats and steals, then so be it. But I will never apologize for saying the things that I said about the CCP.
So were you advocating a full ban of all Chinese from coming to America?
No, absolutely not. I welcome anybody fleeing the communist regime of the Chinese Communist Party. I mean, I am a first generation immigrant. My parents came over here from Korea. I am one generation removed from the North and South, you know, the Korean War. And that was a battle over communism. I welcome people who want to come to this country legally, want to legally flee the Chinese Communist Party. And the fact that people want to editorialize, they don't want to listen to the comments, they don't want to talk about the root origins of COVID in China is not on me. It's on them.
Because you were quoted as saying during a Republican Party immigration forum that was in Arlington that you didn't want immigrants from China to come to the United States. Get that wrong?
No.
So he misquoted you on that?
The Dallas Morning News very clearly put in quotes, "I don't want them," end quote. And then they editorialize the rest of it. So anybody is welcome to, like, read the original article from the original forum. That's exactly what I said. I don't want them. I don't want the Chinese Communist Party sending foreign nationals into our military installations and spy. I mean, here in Texas, we literally had to close the embassy that China had because they were stealing so much intellectual property just in the home base here in Texas. I mean, it is very much a preeminent threat to the state of Texas and to our country.
Why do you think that after working in the Bush administration, working for the Trump administration, you were an administrator in the Small Business Administration for Donald Trump? How come you weren't able to get his endorsement?
Man, I wish I had President Trump's cell phone number so I can ask him that. I
Me
mean,
too.
Really,
a lot of people could say
really
that.
Yeah.
Because we had one of his personal assistants on the show a couple of months back, and she does have his cell number. If I would have known, I would have just gotten it from her and given it to you.
You know what I think, and this is just like me speculating. I think there's so many people giving President Trump his opinion. And there's so many of us who say that we're close to him. I mean, I was also chief of staff of Election Day operations in Pennsylvania. I mean, he literally had thousands of us working for him. And I was very clear to people. I wasn't in the Oval Office with him. I don't have his cell phone number. I am like so many of his supporters and the people who work for him that I believed in his policies. I loved his fight. And I just, you know, wasn't able to have a one-on-one meeting with him in Mar-a-Lago and just tell him that I'm the future of the party. And so hopefully the next time he'll be on board and I'll be able to win my next race whenever that is.
Well, what is the next race? What's in your future?
Exactly.
So my future, well, bless his heart, I have an amazing fiance. He's an active duty U.S. Marine. He was based in Quantico, and he got deployed to CENTCOM. So we are actually on a road trip to Tampa, Florida, so he can check in on Monday.
Wow.
And he still wants to marry me after this crazy congressional race. So duty number one is we're going to elope on Friday, May 28th. Surprise, Mom. Yes.
Wow. Is this news? Gervie's Law is breaking news.
Oh, my goodness.
Congratulations.
Eloping on May 28th. Is this news?
Yes, this is breaking news.
In Florida? At CENTCOM?
Yeah, well, I don't know if anybody at CENTCOM can do it. I'm not going to tell people exactly where, but I will tell you Friday, May 28th, we're going to, you know, put on some cowboy boots, find a really cool judge and some really cool courthouse and just get it done.
Well, good for you.
I picture CENTCOM like NORAD from the game, from War Games, the movie with Matthew Broderick, and with these big, huge screens all over,
old fashioned,
like
ones.
You know, War Games going on. You know, global thermal nuclear war. You know, going on all over the screens. You know, and a guy smoking a cigar saying, "Take us to DEFCON 4."
I mean, that's totally
everyone else
how
has
it
cigarettes.
Is. Exactly.
Totally, exactly.
And white shirts.
So yes, what about professionally? I mean, we're happy for you. It sounds like you guys really found each other, and it's so beautiful that you're doing this, and I'm sure your families are happy about it. What are you going to do professionally? You've got so much to offer, so much energy, and you probably have a lot of enemies now, too. That's kind of exciting.
It is. It is very exciting. I mean, I would say that before I was a uniquely famous person in the sense that if you were really into food and travel, I had this blog. And then also if you were really into nerdy politics, I was, you know, someone that people were very familiar with. But now I'm like ubiquitous / infamous / famous, as you say. And I think the most important thing for me is that there is a fight for the soul of the Republican Party that has absolutely nothing to do with President Trump and has everything to do with our public policy and our position in global supremacy. And as a young person, I want to participate in that because we cannot be a party of just anti-Biden, as dumb as he is, as much of a liar as he is. We cannot just be personally animus against him. We have to have solutions. And I think for the last like 110 days, all we've seen is a cavalcade of DC just being anti-Biden, but we haven't presented a solution. So I want to be a part of the solution agenda. I want to be a part of keeping Texas red. But most importantly, I think the policies of the Republican Party of getting out of people's wallets and households is the way forward for this country. And it's a way forward for us to remain the global superpower.
You sound like such a great politician. You know, I knew you were a great lawyer, and now you've really made a great transition. So we wish you all the luck, Sari. It's Sari Kim. How can people follow you? Because I'm sure after saying that, a lot of people are interested in following you because you're an up-and-coming Republican Korean-American who people, I'm sure, get excited. A lot of people won't get excited, but tell us how they can follow you if they are excited about that.
Yeah, I would love for people to go to sarifortexas.com. Also, I welcome anybody to email me. You can just email me at sari@sarifortexas.com. It's just my first name, sery@seryfortexas.com. And I do respond to every email, even the ugly ones. I just pray for them. Clearly, they're having a terrible life.
Okay. Well, you know what? We want you to have a great life, and we want to congratulate you on your marriage coming up. We wish you all the best. And I want to thank you for being with us, Sari Kim, on Gervie's Law today.
Thank you so much. Have a great night.
Thanks, Sari.
Right, have a good one, Sari.
All right, we got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk to Miguel Sancho about the book More Than You Can Handle. I'm with Troy Slayton. I'm with James Torme, and you're listening to Gervie's Law right here on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
You're listening to Gervie's Law, the intersection of law and life on Talk Radio 790 KABC.
Yeah, can we just listen to this for the rest of the show?
I would love to.
Whoever that is putting on a singing clinic.
A singing clinic?
It's so silky.
What a voice. I want to hear I like it. We're getting into the chorus now.
Yeah.
And we can ride the boogie. Okay,
see, I jazzed
sorry,
it
James,
out.
I can't be singing when you're singing.
No, please don't, Alan.
This is amazing. James Torme. James, tell us how if people are listening to this, they want to go to your website
Sure. And
listen to your music and find out when you're going to be back on tour.
Absolutely.
Tell them how they can find
you. They can go
to
jamestorme.com, T-O-R-M-E. And if they want to kind of be in the loop, so to speak, on the Torme train.
It's not Torm?
No, it's not Torm. There's an accent on there.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, in case you haven't noticed.
All right.
Before there was ever any Bublé, there was Torme, let me tell you. you can go right on there on the every page of my website, jamestorme.com, is a little box, and you can register your email in there. And we will basically all that happens is we send you what we in the business call a show alert every time I do a show in your area. So I will be back, you know, playing live here. And, you know, so keep an eye on the jazz venues here in town, Vibrato.
Yeah, hopefully that'll be soon because
yep,
it's been way, way too long.
We're getting close.
I think it'll be great for everyone to get out and, you know, get motivated again to be with live music. And, you know, speaking of getting motivated, I'm here now with Troy Slayton, who always motivates me, and James Torme. And they're like, I call them before Mutt and Jeff. They could do their own show, the Troy and James show. But our next guest has such a motivating story. And the book is More Than You Can Handle. Chris Cuomo said, this book embodies love in action with brutal honesty. Miguel explores the personal and familial challenges of fighting a child's mysterious illness. But the inspirational power of this book lies in the passion of the parents and the doctors who find ways to save children. In doing so, there is a message for all of us in how to deal with what life throws in our path. The book, More Than You Can Handle, is not simply a memoir about Miguel's family struggle to save his son from a deadly immune deficiency, but it's about how to inspire others, how to be motivated, how to be dedicated to a cause, and how to show love in a way that not many people have ever seen. We're excited to have on the show Miguel Sancho. Welcome to Gervie's Law.
Wonderful to be with you guys. Alan, Troy, James, thank you so much for having me. And I must say, that was a truly inspiring Rock With You rendition. I need to get that, and I need to see James when you come to New York, because I'm just getting introduced to your music, and it's awesome.
Well, I'd be humbled to have you come see a show, my friend.
Yeah.
Listening to you, Miguel, and you're blowing us away with your voice. Forget about James and his singing, but, you know, what the heck? You've got the best radio voice I've ever heard, and I've been doing this show for 8 years with my crappy voice.
What can I say? I did some radio in college. There was a time when I was getting my start in journalism and broadcasting when I did some local news for 1010 Winds here, one of the local news stations in New York. And what can I say? I slid into the production side of things with television journalism. But it's nice of you to say. Yeah, it's good to be back on the radio in this little capacity. But I appreciate it.
Miguel, I am so interested in hearing about your son, Sebastian. You and your wife, Felicia, had your life turned upside down when you discovered that your son had a chronic immune deficiency disease.
It was called GGD, right?
CGD, chronic granulomatous disease. Am I saying that right?
You are, and the thing with rare diseases is they all have these unpronounceable, incomprehensible, non-intuitive names.
Right.
So, you know, you're not going to get quizzed on this.
Basically, yet. It just means that he was highly susceptible to the outside world, to infections, bacteria, mm-hmm. fungi from the outside world. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, he was born, and we thought he was healthy. And then within, you know, like the first 5 months of his life, he was getting this really scary string of infections, and we didn't know what it was, and neither did the doctors, frankly. A very well-intentioned and well-trained doctors, no inherent fault of their own. But yeah, after this diagnostic odyssey that lasted for the better part of a year, we finally found out that, yes, indeed, he had this extraordinarily rare, extraordinarily lethal disease that made him unable to fight off certain common bacterial and fungal infections. That meant the rest of his life was going to be probably shorter and punctuated by what was going to be, a constant danger of infection, which I think a lot of the audience in this post-COVID world can relate to.
Yeah, but you guys were relating to it before, everyone else was.
You were quarantining.
Yeah, we were wearing masks and washing our hands and, touching elevator buttons with our knuckles long before COVID, yes.
So you were quarantining before quarantining became a thing?
In some capacity.
Wow.
I want to say that this particular condition you can live with. He wasn't like boy in the bubble phase for, the first few years of his life. But one thing that we did live with, which again, I'm sure everybody can relate to these days, is the constant kind of fear, the constant negotiation about whether any given activity that we would normally consider, completely innocuous was actually going to result in a life-threatening infection with our son.
So was he able to go to normal school, play sports? Did you have to make accommodations in your house with, like, the air filtration, the HVAC system, extra?
All of that, I bet, right?
Was all that necessary?
A fair amount of it, guys. The situation was that he had to avoid, like the plague, literally, a number of things that, most kids consider completely natural. Again, things basically like running barefoot on the grass or playing in playgrounds that have wood chips or, swimming in a lake. Certainly being around other sick kids was a big thing. So, we didn't have to keep him in a bubble. I don't want to exaggerate. And I do want to emphasize that some people, largely because of some of the great, therapies that are coming out, are able to live with this disease much longer and much better than it used to be even just a few decades ago. But, yes, we had to deal with this, and he was continually getting sick. And ultimately, we kind of bit the bullet and decided that the only way to not just save him, but to save our marriage, to save our sanity, to keep our lives from completely collapsing, we were going to have to roll the dice and take a risk with one of the biggest and most arduous and risky medical procedures you can get, which is a stem cell transplant, often called a bone marrow transplant.
Where you basically, that entails killing all of the good cells in your body and then replacing it with outside cells. Do I have that right in a nutshell?
Is that right?
You guys should be in broadcasting. Yes, this is exactly.
We are, temporarily.
We're just seat warmers for
right. Well, yeah, no, you hit the nail on the head. You basically, and again, it's going to sound simple when I describe it. It's not just like baking a lasagna and following a recipe. But the basic procedure is yes, annihilating the existing immune system with in our son's case, rather severe dosages of chemotherapy, infusing him with matched donor donor cells, which, again, finding a donor match is this huge, you know, burden itself. And then taking every precaution and all sorts of procedures to basically grow a new immune system from scratch. And, you know, this is a literally a year-long process.
That's crazy.
It is.
And families do it all the time. And we just basically got plunged into this world. And it was some of the most horrific, but also some of the most beautiful experiences of that we were ever blessed to have.
And that brings us to your book. So
it's fascinating, and we're talking about the book, but we have to take a break. When we come back, Miguel, I want to hear about when you decided to write the book, More Than You Can Handle, and we have a lot of producers, people listening here in L.A. Want to know when you're optioning it and how people can get a hold of it, because I'm sure the story is so inspiring. Unless you have you already got any deals?
The book just came out recently, and so I'm just putting it out there and waiting to see what happened.
We'll help you. Troy and James are in the business. I have a lot of producer friends. We're going to get this thing optioned before you know it. You're listening to Gurry's Law. Stay tuned. You're going to hear Miguel Sancho talk about More Than You Can Handle after the break. It's right here on Talk Radio 790 KBC.
Need some legal, moral, or just common sense advice from a friend? Call Alan Gurvey at 800-222-KABC. That's 800-222-5222.
Wow. Not only can he sing, but he can play. That's James Torme, and we are talking to Miguel Sancho. The book is called More Than You Can Handle. Elizabeth Vargas, New York Times bestselling author of Between Breaths, said, "An extraordinary book by turns, harrowing and heroic and darkly humorous. It is a must-read for any family confronting an unimaginable diagnosis. I couldn't put it down. You will laugh, you will cry, and you will be moved by the profound courage of ordinary people." Miguel Sancho, you know, I do want to ask you a question because I want to hear your voice again, but in all seriousness, how did you get through this? People have been struggling with the pandemic now for over a year, and you lived this with your son. It couldn't have been easy.
No, it was not easy, and for years we thought it was just going to be, you know, permanent, a life sentence of being kind of imprisoned in this disease for him and for us. And then when we went ahead with the bone marrow transplant, it was actually an imprisonment for months in this kind of hermetically sealed pediatric bone marrow transplant unit at Duke University, which is just a wonderful place filled with some of the most compassionate and brilliant medical professionals on the planet. So how do we do it? The short answer is, or the first part of the answer is, we didn't do it that well. And that's one of the main reasons I wrote the book. You know, you hear about these stories of parents with sick kids, and it always struck me that how is it that they just seem to universally tap into some infinite reservoir of compassion and strength and courage and selflessness? Because, you know, the reality is, and this isn't just in our case, but certainly was in our case, and others, you know, other families I spoke to and interviewed for the book, this kind of thing tears families up. Okay, yeah. People get depressed, they get drunk, they get divorced. I personally did two of those three things and came close to doing the third. What basically happened is, at some point, you know, you ask how we got through it. I will just say personally that, you know, when I was kind of falling apart from all the stress and anxiety and fear and anger, frankly, that's the word, at the injustice of it all, I realized that I was actively making the situation worse and that I had to kind of turn things around in order to prevent, you know, creating hell on earth for the people that I loved and losing them.
That's really interesting. I mean, what a great point. And people can find so many interesting and motivational points by reading the book. Just a couple questions really quickly, Miguel, before we let you go. First of all, we have to ask, how's Sebastian doing?
He's wonderful, and thank you for asking. Yeah, he basically has like a you know, bespoke Cadillac Escalade immune system now that he
awesome.
And road test at will. And as everybody knows, you know, the COVID crisis affected younger children disproportionately weakly, or didn't affect them that badly.
Right.
So, you know, he's doing fine. I will say that it was tragic that after years of having to wear a mask and socially distance, you know, his reward was yet another year of that. And I can certainly, you know, don't get me started about how eager I am for schools across the country to go back to normal. But yeah, he's doing well, and thank you so much for
that's
asking.
Great. That's really great. How can people get a hold of More Than You Can Handle? I know it came out in March.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you said you don't have a movie deal yet, but anyone who reads it or talks about it, hopefully you'll have that movie deal, because I think it would be a great movie.
That's kind of you to say. Yeah, so yeah, I mean, it's available on Amazon, but of course, Amazon doesn't need to get every single dollar of retail that's spent. So you can also get it at your local bookstores. You can go to the Penguin Random House website. And you can either opt to go to my little website, www.miguelsancho.net. Usually misspelled and mispronounced Sanchez, but no, in this case it's Sancho with an O at the end.
Yeah, and if you're Canadian like I am here in Toronto, we call it Sancho, which is, we don't say Sancho, we say Sancho. So I'm going to try to be American by saying, get Miguel Sancho's book, More Than You Can Handle. And thank you for sharing this story with us here on Gervie's Live. We really appreciate it, Miguel. And good luck with the
Thank you so much, guys. Have a great show, and appreciate it.
You're going to inspire a lot of people, my friend.
Thank you, guys. Take care.
All right, take care.
Thank you, Miguel.
So, Troy, James, you guys were like pros. You don't even need me here. Why don't you just take over and do your little, you know,
our
your teamwork shtick?
Well,
and
we
you
are
can
so...
talk about, you know, James, you can talk. I know you want to tell a story about what, you know, your dad and the, what was it, a dumb jock or something?
Oh, that, no, I mean, the funnier one, the ticket one is great. The ticket one, we should do the ticket.
In the Beverly Hills courthouse.
We should do that.
Probably about, what, 15
and
years ago?
And we should do the fire at the bar mitzvah.
About 15 years ago, James got a ticket.
Why don't you keep it in the can?
What?
Oh, okay, go ahead.
He gets a ticket in the streets of Beverly Hills, you know, speeding on, what was it, Cannon, Rodeo?
You remember the street?
What was it?
I was on Cannon.
Okay, you're on Cannon. You're caught by an old-time Beverly Hills
motorcycle officer. A guy I recognized.
Officer.
I'd seen him around for a long time.
I don't know whether it's the guy that Zsa Zsa Gabor slapped. You know, I'm not sure.
You seem to know him.
It may have been. But so we're there in court. James decides he wants to fight it. I'm his attorney. And we're in the Beverly Hills courthouse. It's the day of trial. The police officer's there. He's ready to go. I talked to the officer before the trial, and he says he remembers the ticket. He remembers doing it, and he is ready to testify and get James the chair. But I decide to do a little trick. I said, James, make sure you sit in the audience. James dressed up like he was a lawyer.
So I dress in a suit I hadn't worn almost ever. Like, it was a style of suit I don't wear. You know what I mean? It's not as high fashion.
It's like a lawyer suit.
It was a lawyer suit. I put a lawyer suit on. I put this pair of very reasonable sunglasses of my dad's on.
That he
I had an
wear.
Empty briefcase, which was my dad's briefcase, had nothing inside it. And I went and I was kind of, you know, checking my phone outside of the courtroom first, like you guys do. I was like pretending that I'm checking on a case. I was talking to an imaginary
secretary.
Yes, I go,
yes.
Oh, I don't have time for that.
In front of the cop.
I go, just tell them to cancel it. Tell them to cancel it. I'm talking
cancel
to nobody.
Cancel that deposition.
Yeah, to cancel it. Just tell them to cancel it.
And then when we're in the courtroom, James sits down next to one of the litigants, someone there that's fighting his ticket.
There was an aisle with loads of space on it. But with one person sitting in it, I guess he was waiting for his trial, a young cat, and I sat right next to him. And he's just like, why are you sitting right next to me when there's an entire rest of the aisle? And I just turned to him and I said, I just want you to know, you're in great hands.
But so then the judge calls the case and we're in front of the judge. But James stays in the audience. I don't pull him up. And the officer gives his rendition about what happened. And then it's time for me. And I say, you know, officer, this citation was written about 9 months ago. Is that correct? Yes. And you write about how many tickets on a good day? what, 10, 15, 20 tickets? Yeah, about 10, 15 tickets. So in the past 9 months, you must have written hundreds of tickets. Is that correct? Yes. And so could you please point out where in the courtroom the person is that you wrote the ticket to? If you see that person, could you please indicate where that person is seated or standing and what that person is wearing? And he says, I can't identify the driver. I can't do it. And I said to the judge, well, you know, identity is an issue here. And if the complaining witness is unable to identify the defendant, then we're entitled to a not guilty.
And James Torme doesn't get his ticket.
And the judge says, I agree. Case dismissed.
And the best part of the story, we go to
we're
get.
We're leaving.
That's good. We'll take more applause after this, though.
We're leaving, and we're in the elevator. It's the three of us, me, James, and the cop.
And the cop. The cop comes. It's just the three of us standing in the elevator going down in Beverly Hills.
By the way, officer.
Courthouse.
You know this person standing right next to me? That's James Torme. That's who you issued the ticket to.
And he looks over at Troy and looks at me and then kind of says,
that was a good one.
That was a good one.
He's like, good job.
He goes, that's a good one. And he's like, I've never seen that before.
Great lawyering.
That was some good lawyering. I'd say that's some pretty
this
good
is
lawyering.
When it's great to have a best friend who's in that line of work, my friends.
Yeah. Boy, James, that was...
Was that great? And it was a little acting job for me. No, a little acting practice.
It was a little acting job, though, for James.
A very small acting job.
Now you tell us. That's a good story. You know, that pumps Troy up. Now you tell me. You have a couple good stories.
Oh. First of all... I mean, they are Troy stories. So.
They're all Troy
stories. We only have 2 minutes, so you're going to have to give the abridged version.
How about this very simple story?
Okay.
How about the fire that you caused at your own bar mitzvah?
Well, when I was 13, I had a magic theme at my bar mitzvah, and I come out making my appearance.
Harry Anderson was his hero.
Harry Anderson was a hero who was friends with Mel Torme,
with my dad,
obviously.
From Night Court.
And I walk out, and I've got pyrotechnics coming out of my hands. I'm shooting balls of fire out of my hands, real balls of fire, and it hits one of the ladies who is there clapping, there to support me.
With probably quite a lot of product in her hair?
Yes, and it lights her hair on fire, and her husband is slapping her hair, and, you know, but the show goes on.
The show goes on.
Wow, that did not happen at my bar mitzvah, I'm afraid to say. You know, it's been great having both of you, Troy Slayton and James Torme.
I hope we can come
do
back.
This more often. I don't
Please.
Know if we'll be able to, but it would be nice, maybe when I'm in studio, because I love hearing your stories. Again, let's just promote James. You're going to be, when we're coming out of this pandemic, you're going to be doing some live music.
Yes, I am. There'll be some announcements. If you just get on there and register on jamestorme.com, that's the best thing. There's going to be a few announcements coming up. That I'm very excited about, but I can't give too much detail.
Thanks for being with us, James. Troy, good luck to you. I'm sure you have some new and exciting things coming up.
There will be. There'll be some announcements.
I'm looking forward to it. And check out the Calabasas Style magazine for see my family on the cover. Thanks for listening to Gervie's Law.